This is Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, here's Gary and Rob. Golf is sponsored by the Club at Lac La Belle, one of the oldest and most beautiful courses in Wisconsin. The course was recently restored and recreated for a unique golf experience for both members and non-members. Lac La Belle is located in Oconomowoc, a convenient distance between Milwaukee and Madison. The semi-private golf club's grand opening is scheduled for June 20th. Find out more on its website at clubatlaclabelle.com. We welcome you into our Talking.Golf podcast. Rob Hernandez joined by Gary D'Amato, the hardest working man in golf journalism. Gary, you've had quite a week trying to decipher what we can and can't do on a golf course in the state of Wisconsin. And I guess to summarize is we are like the rest of the world. We can't do anything, can we?
No, we really can't. Yeah, the Safer at Home order issued by Governor Evers basically shut down golf. And it was fluid there for a while, Rob. We, you know, for a couple of days, we weren't sure which direction this was going to go. There was some ambiguity in the order, and that was pretty cleared up. That was cleared up pretty quickly by Governor Evers. And so we're sort of in lockdown mode, unfortunately, when it comes to golf and a lot of other things in life, too.
Well, and I think, you know, the response from the golf community in Wisconsin has been really, I think, for us, refreshing, because it shows how important golf is. The online petition that was circulated, signed by thousands upon thousands of golfers and non-golfers alike, who saw that there might be a potential for, for golf to be played with great precaution. Unfortunately, it just really fell on deaf ears, it would appear.
I think so, Rob. Governor Evers, as you can imagine, at this point has, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people trying to get in his ear. Certainly golf, the golf organizations in our state and constituents are doing the same. But I think the governor is up to his eyeballs and worrying about so many things. I don't believe he's a golfer, so I don't think this is front and center for him. And I think he sees what Illinois did and, you know, shutting down golf and opening it for a few days and shutting it down again. And I just don't think, I get the impression, and I'm speculating here, that he just doesn't want to go there. He just doesn't want to open golf courses at this point. And the worry, Rob, among the golf course owners and operators is that April 24th is going to come and go and the order is going to be extended. And then golf courses would really start to suffer. So that's the big worry out there right now.
Yeah, and I would hope that there'd be some relief in sight by that point. Again, we've all seen the bell curves and, where we're trying to flatten this thing. And we are looking at pretty much the entire month of April where that, the number of cases, the number of deaths are expected to go to a certain peak at about, what, between April 15th and April 25th, and then start to come down. But again, those are all projections. Those seem to change by the minute. We've seen differences between New York and California. In terms of what the Safer at Home orders have done to try to, cut down on the numbers that we're seeing as far as the virus and the impact it's having. So a lot of things that are so far above our knowledge level, Gary, in terms of, cause and effect and what it might mean for golf. That's the hard part, I think, for us to wrap our minds around. People wondering, why doesn't the governor just sort of cave? Well, the governor, as you said, has many other issues on his desk, but he's also, in his staff, they're also looking around. I mean, out here in California, we had a lot of golf courses open when we talked a week ago, and now, with the exception, to my knowledge, of the city of Oceanside, every other course that had been open for the past week, as of Saturday, closed down. And again, we're starting to see this trickle-down effect from, what one state does, another state will adopt. Chicago, Illinois, closed courses, opened them, closed them again. I talked to Jordan Hahn, the former Badger, who's now, he's trying to get status on the Corn Ferry Tour. He's gone from trying to find a place to play competitively, Gary, to literally trying to find a place to play recreationally to keep his game in shape. And that's kind of where we all are.
Exactly, Rob. There's more than 50,000 people have signed that petition on change.org, Let Wisconsin Golf. That's a huge number of people. That's really a big number for a petition of that order. But The thing is, Rob, I think, you know, there's just as many non-golfers in the state who would put pressure on Governor Evers and others and state representatives to say, don't let golf courses open. Non-golfers who don't understand maybe that golf practiced under the guidelines that have been set forth by the CDC could be as safe, if not safer, than a lot of things that are sort of being allowed right now. So you've got these competing constituencies, and I think you're right. You go back to Governor Evers. I just don't think he's going to act in any way on this April 24th as far as opening early. I don't think it's going to happen.
And for the last time I counted, I've been updating the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America list of state by state action, and that has changed a lot, especially heading into the weekend. It kind of nothing really happened over the last couple of days. It might happen. There might be some updates yet today, but the last look at that one, Gary, 9 of the 25 states that had full statewide safer at home orders did not have golf. But of course, then that means that 16 did. And, you know, how are they making it work, and what goes into it? I think the one that people see on that list that they kind of shake their head at based on what we're seeing in the mainstream media is the fact that New York, for a long time last week, had all their golf courses open. Now the Metropolitan PGA section clubs are closing down. You know, that's a hard hit state in terms of the impact of this pandemic. And they were open. And, you know, you can debate on all sides of this whether that's a good look or not. And I think at the end of the day, it goes beyond what's a good look or not, Gary. It comes down to what's in the best interest health-wise of the most people. And I think, you know, again, we go back to discretion is the better part of valor when you're a government leader. And I think that's where Tony Evers is on this matter right now.
I agree, Rob. And I've had a couple of golf course owners and operators tell me they would actually hate to open and then have, you know, someone contract the coronavirus at their course and spread it to more people. A couple golf course owners have told me I couldn't live with that. So while I think the majority of courses really are desperate to open and get golfers on their facilities, you know, there's that sentiment out there that, you know, we don't want golf to be blamed if should there be a further spread of this thing. So there's so much uncertainty, Robin. There's opinions are all over the board on this issue. It's such a fascinating time in our country's history to see how we're going to respond to this thing.
One more thing on the COVID-19 pandemic related to golf in Wisconsin. You posted a great story today, what will golf look like in the post-pandemic? Why don't you summarize basically, Gary, what you're hearing from golf course owners? And we joked before we came on the air that you know, they're already responding to your story post on Facebook with, you know what they're going to do in terms of deals and things for golfers to get them back into it once this thing's lifted. I think that's encouraging, too.
It is. You know, there's really a lot of concern out there. And the concern really is that, you know, April 24th comes and goes and the order's extended and people aren't playing golf in May or at least the first part of May. That's when, you know, some outings start to happen. That's when they start organizing. Golf courses leagues start organizing at least. And there's genuine concern and worry among golf course operators in Wisconsin and certainly in many other states that the game is really going to be impacted and their facilities are really going to struggle. Not only because of the length of the order, but because of what's happened to the economy with so many people having lost their jobs. And, you know, a lot of people are going to be really careful with their discretionary spending when this is over. You know, they're going to have to pay bills. They're going to have to pay mortgages. And a lot of people, you know, haven't been working and won't be working for some time. So there's a lot of concern out there in the golf industry and among course owners where this is going to go, Rob.
Gary, before we talk about what's next on this issue, let's, you know, just pause for a minute. There were a couple other stories that were posted to the site over the last week that were not directly related to the situation at hand and kind of gave our readers an opportunity to kind of get away from those. One was posted yesterday, Dennis McCann, the story that first appeared online in the Wisconsin Golfer magazine through the WSGA. A father and son have logged 48 straight months of golf in Wisconsin. And the headline says, sometimes with a cordless drill. And that's a pretty impressive streak. I think we've all wanted to do that. And I think that the streak could be in jeopardy, like you say, if we're not able to golf in the month of April here. But at least it would have an asterisk because nobody would be able to golf in April. But a very cute story. You've, I'm sure, got some streaks going. Have you ever thought about trying to play every month of the year come, I guess, it can't be hell or high water. It would be hell or high snowbanks, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was a fun story by Dennis. And, you know, I really haven't thought. There's a lot of things I love to do in golf, but I don't know about playing on. I did once, Rob, years ago. I joined a group of guys that were on a similar streak. We played Scenic View on January 1st. Temperature was about 15 degrees. And I remember on the ninth hole, I hit a sand wedge, a high lofting sand wedge. It hit the green and bounced 30 feet in the air because the green was hard as rock and landed in a pine tree like 20 yards behind the green. I mean, give those guys credit for doing that. That was my one foray into really brutal winter condition golf. And I don't think I'd want to do that as a habit, Rob. How about you?
No, not back in Wisconsin. And that's one of the reasons we moved out here to California was because I can at least do it in shorts year round. But, I was a trooper. I remember, and sometimes those coldest weather outings are the best. I remember one time going up when I was a member at Reedsburg Country Club, went up over, it was almost like a Thanksgiving weekend. I remember it was the first day of the gun deer season. And I think I took my daughter out when she was really young. And we just walked about four holes and that was enough. And it was too cold. You could hear, gunfire in the distance because it was the first day of the gun deer season. And I said, I think we're going to put the clubs away for the year. But, those are always the going to Packer football games when you can't feel your feet on the concrete stadium. Those are the ones that you remember the most. So kudos to that duo for getting out there and keeping that streak alive. Gary, one other thing that came through the headlines this week. We know now who the prospective owner of the Bullet Pinehurst Farms in Sheboygan Falls is. Milwaukee businessman Scott Molitor is the name that has emerged. And I know Dennis McCann, also following this story, said Scott's really eager, kind of holding off on talking about the purchase until everything gets signed, sealed, and delivered. But great news, in my opinion, for the Bullet Pinehurst Farms that it will have a new life, and one of the great upscale courses in the state of Wisconsin, the Jack Nicklaus Design, will continue to move forward.
It is great news, Robin, and a very interesting time to buy a golf course. obviously, Mr. Molitor didn't, the coronavirus wasn't, no one had even heard of it when he started the process of looking into buying the bull. But I'm glad he didn't drop the ball, so to speak. And I think golfers can be thankful throughout the state and beyond that there's going to be a new owner of the bull. And it's going to, I'm sure, be maintained to the same high standards that it was under David Bachman. And it is good news for Wisconsin, for sure.
And Scott has retained the management company Kemper Sports, which has managed a number of courses throughout the state of Wisconsin over the years, and to help with the due diligence on the purchase and to kind of, get the course back up and running. So that also good news for golfers across the state of Wisconsin to have that going forward. As you say, Gary, as we look ahead on this whole situation, with what's next, we've talked about, how will, in your story today, address it, how will the courses, come out of this? What can we do? I would think people be chomping at the bit to get back out to play. The question is, will they have the money to do it? What do you see as the best case scenario, if and when this order is lifted, as far as, what the golf landscape looks like going forward in the state of Wisconsin?
I would hope, Rob, that golfers, are going to rally around golf courses and help support them. I was on Steve Zabin's radio show this morning in Milwaukee, and he said in the month of May, if courses are open, he's going to put forth a double your play sort of theme and play twice as much as you normally would in the month of May. And I think all those things are really good because I think courses are going to need our help when they do reopen. They haven't had any revenue coming in, and they won't for at least a couple more weeks and maybe longer. So, and they have to spend money. They have to maintain their courses. They have to cut greens and put down fertilizer, and those things all cost money. And so I think golfers, I really believe when golf finally opens again, that golfers in our state are going to rally around their favorite courses. I hope they do.
As some people have said, distance makes the heart grow fonder on this issue. You know, being away from the game, I know for me, not having played now and going on 2 weeks, you know, the ability and just to pick up your clubs, throw them in the trunk and go, you know, drive to the course and even walk nine, you know, I mean, I'm so looking forward to being able to do that again. And I think that part, I hope, you know, I think based on the number of people who've signed the online petition, the number of people who have spoken out, the number of people who've been so passionate on social media, both to you and to me, but in general, and had discussions with their friends, you know, they are very much looking forward to that day when they can tee it up again on a state course. And I'm hoping that comes sooner versus later. Gary, a couple of things that we're working on for this week. I've got some stories coming on, again, the impact on the college golfers that were displaced, some of them in their senior seasons. I talked to Eloise Healy, a Badger women's golfer who is now back home in England. They're under far greater restrictions as far as to what they can and can't do than we are. And Tess Hackworthy, the three-time defending Wisconsin Women's State Open champion out of Madison. And she was out here in California at her parents' home out that they maintain out in Santa Barbara for a while. But then they all decided perhaps best to just sort of, you know, ride this out back home in Madison. So like everybody, home waiting for golf courses to open. But they're also waiting to see what happens today. An NCAA committee, Gary, is meeting as we speak to determine the details of this extra eligibility that was suggested at the various levels. And I think over the weekend, a lot was written about the potential cost. We're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars for each school if all the seniors who are eligible to take the extra year do so. And if they are given additional scholarship considerations, what that would mean for the overall budget. And the other thing that came out was that these colleges and universities, the Division I level, Gary, are not getting as much money back from the NCAA this year because there was no March Madness and because there are no spring tournament series. The revenue stream is not what it was projected to be. And so they're going to get, I believe I saw somewhere in the neighborhood of 60% less than they originally earmarked to get each school. That's a huge hit, and I'm not sure how the colleges are going to deal with that.
No, that is a huge hit, Rob. You're absolutely right. And the other part of the equation that some people don't consider when they talk about giving seniors extra eligibility is we have freshmen coming in. We have freshmen who are going to be on scholarships and freshmen who are going to make golf teams. So, you know, what do you do about roster sizes and all that kind of, I mean, there's so many things that go into it, but people forget about talking about the back end of seniors. They forget about the front end of golfers coming in and athletes coming into schools.
Well, and then I to drill down even deeper, you know, I was looking at Division II has already addressed this. They're going to give that extra year, but as we've talked about in the past, you know, while the aura of a scholarship opportunity at the Division II level is great, oftentimes you're talking about splitting one scholarship among eight kids. So we're not talking about a huge financial commitment from the scholarship end, but you know, there is the whole thing, like you say, about the, you know, the impact on the roster. And if a coach, you know, will the coach have the final say in whether they want that kid back or not? That question is, one story says it's the one that nobody wants to say out loud, but it's the one that everybody's thinking. I mean, there are some kids that, you know, have, you know, I think maybe, you know, done their time at a certain school, both in terms of what they can get out of it and what the coach feels they can get out of the kid, and they may not want them back, and it's a reality, and especially if you've got a better kid coming in, and then to drill down deeper, there are some mechanisms in place already with language at the Division II level, where if the senior were to transfer, so this is kind of like that grad transfer. They would have the extra year of eligibility. However, they would count towards the scholarship total of, or the roster total of the school they would be transferring to. So, the transfer portal, you know, figures to be very active if some of this stuff extends to the Division I level in all these spring sports. And again, it's not as clean and neat and clean in golf either, is it, Gary, with the fact that almost every university in the country has a fall and a spring season. And I don't, you know, I think a lot of what was suggested was kind of seen as the baseball, softball, track and field, which are the three real big sports for the NCAA with their College World Series in baseball and softball. And then the NCAA track championship tends to get your future Olympians on the same track. You know, those are big deals, but those are spring only activities for the most part. And so a lot still to learn. We hopefully will learn more today. I'm fascinated by this just because I'm a geek when it comes to these NCAA rules and how, you know, kids try to get around them.
Yeah, Rob, listening to your the last minute or so, I've gotten a headache. I'm glad I'm not I'm glad I'm not a college administrator in the athletic department that has to worry about some of these issues. And I'll look forward to your reporting on these issues as we go forward, Rob.
And then last but not least, we talked also before we came on the air, the Korn Ferry Tour, if it were to start up again without further delay, it would start up at the Evans Scholar Invitational in Chicago. I know Dan Woltman, when I talked to him late last week, was looking forward to that. It's a course that he's played well in the past and an event where he's had some success. It would be neat to have an event starting up right away in our backyard. But at this point, Gary, we really don't know whether those events will be played, and we still don't know what the status of the Ryder Cup is. And those are, I think, the big questions looming as we look down the road this week.
Absolutely, Rob. Hopefully soon we're going to have some kind of settlement on whether the Ryder Cup will be played or not. I don't think they can go a whole lot longer and not declare it either postponed or say, yeah, we're definitely going to go ahead and play it. So I would think in the coming week or two, maybe three at the most, we'll have an answer to the Ryder Cup. And obviously, closer on our radar is the AmFam Championship in Madison. That's only a couple months away now. What's going to happen with that? 3 months away, I guess.
Exactly. Well, so much to look forward to, and I'm sure, you know, we'll be monitoring that. We'll be monitoring, again, if the governor does lift the order on closing golf courses in the state of Wisconsin. You'll be the first to know here at Wisconsin.golf. Gary, it's a weird time for us as reporters because we really don't know what our next story is going to be, you know, depending on where things go. But we'll never forget the spring of 2020, will we?
Never. This is unprecedented. And, Rob, we can only hope and pray that something like this never happens again. But, the strange times indeed.
And last but not least, we hope that on June 20th, the club at Lac La Belle will be able to welcome its first golfers in by that point. Again, Talking.Golf is sponsored by the club at Lac La Belle, one of the oldest and most beautiful courses in Wisconsin. The course was recently restored and recreated for a unique golfing experience for both members and non-members. Lac La Belle is located in Oconomowoc, a convenient distance between Madison and Milwaukee. And again, that semi-private golf club's grand opening will be on June 20th, all, you know, everything permitting. And you can find out more about the club and its efforts here to reopen and give golfers another upscale golfing opportunity at clubatlaclabelle.com. Gary, I hope for everybody's sake that we'll have the chance to tee it up at Lac La Belle when I'm back this summer, because that stands to be a great opportunity for golfers if and when we get this season started.
It's going to be a beautiful place, Rob, and I'm hoping that I can join you there on June 20th or soon after.
Outstanding. For Gary D'Amato, Rob Hernandez, this has been Talking.Golf, sponsored by the club at Lac La Belle in Oconomowoc. We'll talk to you next week.